Hi everyone, it's Elaine Hamilton from the Reiki Center, and today I have Pooja Arora with me. I'm so excited. I have known Pooja for over 15 years, and gosh, we've had all kinds of shenanigans together, and she is, I don't really know how to describe you, Pooja. It's like you're one of the most curious, prolific learners, I think is the best way, just in terms of your capacity to learn modalities, to integrate modalities into what you're doing. And so I'm really excited about this interview, because for those of us who are like myself, a little bit more like single-minded, I always find it fascinating to talk about the diversity, if you like, of all the different kinds of modalities and how they intermingle with each other and how they can develop into, like, I know you have your own unique way of doing it. So yeah, lots to talk about. But before we get into all of that juicy stuff, I just think it'd be really nice for you to introduce yourself and just give us a little bit of a background as to what brought you to Reiki in the first place, because I know that is a pretty stunning story in and of itself. Over to you.
Thank you so much, Elaine. I'm so excited to be here and chatting with you. I'm really excited to kind of share what I have, what I've experienced, what I know, and just kind of have a great conversation with you. So I'll start a little bit with my story or journey with Reiki. And I think my journey with anything alternate started about 25 years ago, when I was 20 years old. So I'm dating myself here. And I'm an engineer by training, and I grew up very, very left-brained. So if it can't be proven by science, it can't be true kind of a person. And universe has its own unique ways, I guess, to push and nudge in the right direction. And in my case, it wasn't a push or a nudge, it was a really boom. So it gave me a very hard shove. And I met with an accident. So I fell off what would be considered, in India, 1.5 floors, I think, any other, 1.5 floors story. And I had a very Bollywood style fall. So I fell and I hit my head, my neck, my spine, other couple of places in my body. And I pretty much broke every bone that could be broken. But the most significant of that was my neck bone. So my neck bone broke into two and one part entered a nerve bundle. And when I came to, I had lost consciousness. When I came to, I was told I was paralyzed and I could never walk again. So my entire right side of the body was paralyzed. I think the good part is I was a very stubborn teenager. So when my kids are being stubborn now, I'm like, oh, there is something good about being stubborn. So I guess my parents reaped that benefit. So I was a very stubborn teenager and I was like, ah, that can't be true. That can't be possible that I'll be wheelchair bound for the rest of my life. And the doctors were like, yep, that's unfortunately the case. So I checked myself out of the hospital in 8 days, in spite of all the injuries, because I just felt the doctors were not helping me the way I needed to go. And I just focused on one thing, that is how to get better. And in about 3 months, my right toe started moving. The doctors had no explanation on why it started moving. I think it was just sheer determination.
Willpower.
That made it move. But because it was moving, they were like, okay, we'll kind of help you along. So they put me in like a metal cage. And they started very, very slow move, excuse me, very slow movements. And as the progress started happening, the healing progress started happening, but it was very slow. So I had to relearn how to walk, I had to relearn how to write, I relearn how to eat, everything. Mm-hmm. But it was excruciating. I was taking painkillers and sleeping pills every day. It was a very painful, slow journey. And during that journey, somebody introduced me to this program called Silver Method. And they said, hey, this power of mind-body healing. And I almost laughed at them. Are you kidding me? Like a meditation can help me heal the body. How is that possible? But I somehow went for that training, and that training changed my life. It kind of taught me what the power of mind could do, what the power of meditation can do, and how can you heal your body. So the mind-body healing connection I learned when I was half paralyzed. And I used that and I ran with it. So I kind of cured myself out of paralysis with that technique, so with that, with all what I've learned in the mind-body healing. And for me, that was amazing. I loved it. And things were going great. My healing was progressing day by day. I moved from India to Singapore. And in Singapore, you know, when you begin to heal, you kind of stop doing all the precautions you're supposed to do. And that happened with me, and I was supposed to wear a neck collar, but I didn't because I didn't want to. And about 2 years here, I had my first relapse. So I lay down in bed in the night. In the morning, I couldn't walk again. I was paralyzed for the second time. And for me, I think that was the pits because I think I had this journey of recovering and this miraculous healing, which everyone was very amazed by. And then I was down again where I couldn't walk again. So the doctors really couldn't do anything because even my first journey was considered a medical miracle. So they had no idea why I was walking in the first place. They had no idea why I relapsed or why I can't walk. So they put me in the air ambulance, sent me back to India. And when I was really in the dumps, a friend of my mother came up to me and says, "Hey, I know this modality called Reiki. Would you be interested?" And I was like, "Bring it on. At this point, I don't care what that is. So you bring it on." And she came and she taught me Reiki 1 and Reiki 2 while I was half paralyzed again. She taught me, my sister, Reiki, and she gave me Reiki every day. My sister gave me Reiki every day. I gave myself Reiki every day. And the beauty of Reiki was so amazing that within 4 weeks, I had come back to Singapore and joined back work. So in 4 weeks, it turned around for being paralyzed again to being back at work. So for me, that was again like a big golden nugget I had found, and I loved it. So for me, my healing journey from that accident, from the paralysis, had like three stools. So one was the silver method, which is the power of mind. One was Reiki, and I discovered yoga therapy for the physical body healing. So I was kind of working with these three to recover and really get myself out of all the physical issues I was having. And it was amazing to the point that I think about this is what, 8 years after my accident, I climbed my first mountain. So I went and climbed Machu Picchu in 2005. Then I've been since then climbing mountains here and there, Kota Kinabalu, Kilimanjaro, just to, in a way, prove to myself I can do it from not being able to walk to being able to climb mountains. But what was interesting was with my journey with Reiki. So after I became better, I climbed my first mountain. I became physically pain-free. And that was pretty amazing for me. It was after 8 or 9 years that I became physically pain-free. And in my head, for me, Reiki was equivalent to dealing with the physical issues. So when I became physically pain-free, I stopped using it as often. And I became less and less frequent with Reiki, which was fine. I'd moved to US by then, life was busy, and I was physically in a really great place. Then I moved back to Singapore and I was put in a very high stress job. So I was still working in the corporate world at that point in time. Very high stress job. So me and my friend were discussing how bad the stress was in the current job that we were working. And she was like, "Oh, you know what? I go for these things called Reiki shares. Are you interested?" And it suddenly turned my head, "Oh, Reiki, I loved Reiki. And I've not been using it as often. In fact, I'd kind of lost touch with it over the last few months. Why don't I try it again?" So that's when I came to you for one of your shares, Elaine. And I rediscovered Reiki with you in Singapore, and that was amazing. And then, because my first journey was done on the bed, literally, I chose to retrain with you. So I did Reiki 1, Reiki 2, and all the way to Reiki Masters training with you. But I think the second brush with Reiki was very different than the first brush. The first brush was very focused on physical healing and recovery. Whereas my second brush was first to deal with the stress management, but also it was very emotional. So it was working through all my emotions. It was working through all the mental challenges I was facing. And I think the second brush with Reiki was such a deep connection that it started working at me at spiritual level to the healing, of kind of who I am and where I wanted to go. So I don't know if you remember, but I have a very vivid memory of this conversation you and I had in 2010. I was in a very good job, doing very well, generally was fine. So I came up to you and I was like, "I have no idea what's wrong in my life. Like, my work's great, my husband's great, in-laws are great, like friends great. Like, I have no idea if there's anything wrong in my life." And I'm crying, I'm just completely howling. And you're looking at me saying, "Oh, clearly something's wrong."
You look great. No problems.
I think that the second brush with Reiki kind of helped me focus a little bit on what do I really want, and not what I was doing. And I would credit Reiki to kind of helping me find my spiritual path. So as I deepened my journey in Reiki, I kind of discovered that I didn't really want to do what I was doing, which is the corporate world. And then I gave that up. And then I started dabbling in healing full time. So for me, the second
Dabbling.
Reiki
Interesting, you
was
call it dabbling. We'll get on to that later.
it's a double. So yeah, for me, the second brush with Reiki was very, very deep spiritual connection, I guess. Emotional healing, mental clarity, spiritual connection. Of course, the physical healing's always been a part of my journey, but it's been very different from the first round. So that's the story with Reiki, and I love it. I do it every day, and I still absolutely love Reiki.
I love your story so much. I remember the first time you told me, I literally had my jaw on the floor because I was like, I realized that I was talking to a walking miracle. I'd just never met anybody like that before. That, I've met people that come to Reiki and they heal from a lot of difficulty for sure. And, things like cancer or arthritis or diabetes and all these kinds of pretty big stories, really. But the fact that you're kind of walking around, the doctors are shaking their head, going, "You shouldn't be walking around," and yet there you are climbing mountains. I'm just like, but that really highlights to me the incredible power we have inside for self-healing, right?
Absolutely.
It's extraordinary. It's really extraordinary. So I'm going to take you back to like these three pillars, because as you were saying that, I was like, yeah, that's really interesting. I have the same thing actually. In terms of the physical, so you've got yoga, in terms of keeping the body fit and healthy, is a really important part. And then we've got the Reiki, which is the more spiritual aspect, though when you first came to it, it was also a very physical. But then also you can think back and go, well, maybe it still was the spiritual component way back then, right? And then you've got the mental, emotional stool leg, which is more the silver method and all the other things that you're doing as well. You can put a lot of those in there as well, right? So do you think that like when you are when you're working with clients or students, do you feel that those three components are essential for everybody to find, like what's their pillars? What's your
I think
thoughts on that?
absolutely. I think so too. I actually go back to this theory from a book called Yoga Sutra, which is a 5,000-year book, and they talk a lot about five koshas. So it's called the Panch Kosha, and they say every person in us have five layers. So there's the physical layer, there's the energy layer, there's the mental layer, which is the layer of emotions and feelings, then there's the wisdom layer, and there's the spiritual layer. So the theory they say is that if you're kind of vibrating at the wise layer, if you're making wise decisions, you're intellectually quite sound, you are responding to life versus reacting to life, or you're in the spiritual layer, you're generally fine. Life's okay. There's not much happening in life. And according to the theory, everything starts with the mental layer, which is the layer of emotions and feelings. And that gets imbalanced, that gets transferred to the energy layer, which gets imbalanced, which gets then transferred to the physical layer, which gets imbalanced. And I actually start all my workshops with that theory. And we talk about the three layers, the mental layer, the energy layer, and the physical layer, which are the places of imbalances in our lives. And different people resonate with a different starting point. Any healing modality has to work across all three layers. So even with Reiki, the entry is through the energy layer, but it works mentally. It works on the physical body. So it has to balance all three layers, but the entry of different modalities are through different layers. And sometimes when you're able to combine layers, which in my case happened very organically, we started working on the mind with the silver method, with the energy on the Reiki and the body on the yoga. I never knew about this theory then. But the moment you combine and work on all three layers, your healing increases leaps and bounds. And that's been kind of as I dabble and work through and kind of explore various other modalities, for me it's very clear which layer they go in and what are they adding to each layer in terms to increase the healing or facilitate the flow of healing.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So I've never heard that before either. So in terms of working on these three, I guess you could call it, what can I call it? Like personal level. Because once you're getting into the wisdom and the spiritual realms, it's almost like that's the more connected with
Correct.
other things like life. But from a personal actionable levels, we're looking at all these three areas.
Yes.
Oh, completely
Absolutely.
lost my train of thought now. God, I hate it when that happens. Nope, it's gone.
Actually, if that helps you, I know this will not translate on the audio, but I'll just show you. Oh, I can't share. I was about to show you these layers.
Oh no, show me. This would be good. Does that help?
Yeah. So this is how the theory says from Yoga Sutra. These are the five layers, and each one of us have these five layers within us. So they're called the koshas in Sanskrit.
That's
So
really interesting. So the energy layer would kind of translate to chi, wouldn't it? Or
that is
not?
correct. The energy layer would translate to chi in Chinese, to ki in Japanese, to prana in Hindi or Sanskrit.
Gotcha.
So that will be the energy layer. And the mental layer will be translating to the layer of emotion and feeling. So our mind actually gets divided into two. The layer of emotion and feeling goes into the mental layer, but the layer of being able to ponder over the emotions and feelings and make an equanimous decision goes into the intellectual layer.
Interesting. Which makes sense. So when we're actually able to become more detached from our emotions and our feelings, we actually do make wiser choices, right? Like we can see more, there's much more clarity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting. So for those of you listening on the podcast, you're going to have to jump onto the video to see this slide. You have to jump onto YouTube to see this. That's really helpful. Thank you. Yeah, I love that. So
Sure.
in terms of your own, so let's carry on with your journey because essentially that's kind of mind-blowing. And then you started so-called dabbling and teaching Reiki. So remind me, it's been a while now. So remind me of your own journey of teaching, because I know you teach like so many different things now. So talk us through that. And based on this kind of theory as well, how were you, or if it was something completely different, like how you were drawn to learn and build your toolkit, really.
Sure. So I think when I started the journey of Reiki again, learning with you, I also realized there were other stuff happening, right? That there were some emotional traumas from the accident or even from my childhood, which were never addressed. So I started dabbling with therapy in 2008, 2009. And I dabbled with conventional therapies, so CBT kind of thing, but also past life therapy, hypnotherapy, and so on and so forth. And I was finding that I was getting a lot more clarity, wisdom, relief, kind of release of my emotions through some of the more hypnotherapy, subconscious mind therapy. So hypnotherapy, past life therapy, and then I went into inner child therapy. So all of that was helping me a lot along my healing journey, along with the Reiki journey I was going through. So when I quit my job, I actually was just a Reiki teacher, not just, but like that was the only modality I had learned by then. So I started teaching in 2013, 2014, teaching Reiki. And it was very interesting. I was very clear in my head that I don't want to do one-on-one therapy. I just want to do teaching, and I want to only teach Reiki to begin with. And if there's anything else, I'll figure it out. But that was my stance at that point. And one of my students was like, "No, I don't. I really want therapy from you." She started asking for Reiki healing. At that point, I wasn't even offering one-on-one Reiki healing. I was like, "No, I only teach." But she was like, "No, I want Reiki healing from you." So I started doing some Reiki healing, and then it so happened that one of my teachers said, "Hey, I'm doing a hypnotherapy course." I was like, "Okay, I enjoyed hypnotherapy as a client. I'm going to learn how to be a therapist." But again, in my head, I was doing it to satisfy my need. I wasn't doing it to become a therapist. So I learned hypnotherapy, and I learned up to two levels. And person, another client came and said, "Hey, my father needs some help. And I know you're working with hypnotherapy. Can you work through this fear and phobia?" And I was like, "Hey, I'm just a student and I'm not even like, I don't even think I want to do this stuff. So don't talk to me." And he said, No. He trusts you. He's met you. So just please one session." So I was like, "Fine." So I did one session of hypnotherapy. It was a specific, I still remember because you always remember your first session. It was a fear of flying. So the father had come from India, had to go back to India, and was terrified of taking the flight. So I had also done NLP by then. So I did some NLP anchors, I did some hypnotherapy. I kind of made up a session for him. And I was pretty convinced nothing will work because I was like this novice new person trying to figure out. And I told my client, I was like, "I'm going to be experimenting on your father. Are you okay with that?" And he was like, "Yeah, fine." And 3 days later, he sent me a message saying my father had a great flight home. He had no issues.
Wow.
And I had goosebumps because I never expected that. And I was like, "What happened here?" And my client's like, "Oh, now I need to come to you for sessions." And I was like, "I have no idea what to do in the sessions." So I called up my teacher and I was like, "Okay, I just need to level up now very quickly because I have no idea what to do, but the client is going to come up now." So in a way, I got pushed into therapy by my clients, and then I realized I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed both learning how to do the therapeutic modalities and also working with the clients and seeing the shifts that come through. So I then deepened in hypnotherapy. I became a clinical hypnotherapist, and then I went into inner child, and that was also a very interesting journey. Because inner child course was not happening in Singapore, it was happening in India. And it was a 6-module course over 1.5 years, and I had to fly 6 times to India. And I was like, "I don't know if I can do that." And by that time, my son was about 1 or 2 or 3 years old. And I was like, I had a tiny toddler at home. How can I fly to India 6 times? So I said, "Okay, I'm just gonna try this one module and then see if I wanna sign up for the 5." And I think I tried that one module, and again, that module was mind-blowing. Like I think it touched such a core part of me and healed such a core part of me that I just knew that not only had to learn how to do this, I had to learn how to teach this, I had to bring this to Singapore. Like those 6 days in India, I knew what I needed to do with this. And of course, then I ended up going to India 6 times to learn the inner child therapy, and then I invited the trainer to come here and then train me to be a teacher. And then alongside that, I was learning past life therapy. So I learned from two different schools. One was from Andy Tomlinson in the UK. And then I realized that I loved it, but something wasn't scratched yet. So also very interesting, I had heard of this course called transpersonal regression therapy. And again, that was at that time only happening in India. It was a deepener, 18 months deepener in past lives, and it goes way beyond Earth past lives. It's just a pretty amazing course that takes you through your deepest soul journey from where you came from, way before you came to Earth, and your entire soul journey gets mapped and healed in that course. So I really wanted to do that, but it was again only happening in India, and I couldn't do another 6 rounds to India. My family would disown me. So I thought about this, and I was inspired by the Virgin Chairman, right? He wanted an airline, and he said he's going to make one or he start an airline. So I just wrote to this guy, Hans Sandam, saying, "What would you think about bringing this course in Singapore? How many minimum students you would need?" And he was like, "I need 6." I was like, "Fine, I'll get you 6 students." So
Brilliant.
I just moved.
He brought him to you.
I brought him to me,
Love it.
and we started our first transpersonal regression therapy course here because honestly, because I wanted to do it, and I was a student come and organize the first time around. And I loved it. And since then, I've become a trainer for that as well. So I train hypnotherapy, I train inner child therapy, and I train transpersonal regression therapy, which is past life. And I've been just loving all of those. And I guess as I continue that, in the middle, I've done a lot of other small things like body talk and a couple other therapies, but I think these are my main ones. But I
Every
think my
time I
next.
meet you, literally every time I talk to you, it's like, oh, I'm training for this. And it's not only I'm just training, like introduction sessions. It's like, oh, I'm training to be a certified teacher in this. I'm just like, how, what? And then you were running one center, now you're running two centers on top and kids. And honestly, I think You cheat time somehow, don't you, really? You do. You warp time. I
I'm
think
more
you're a you're literally like a time master. It's like every time I talk to you, I feel exhausted just talking to you. It's just unbelievable.
I think for me it just flows. I guess that's the best part about it. Like I love this and it just flows. It doesn't feel like it's onerous or I need to spend more time or effort in it. It just flows and the times just work out when I need to do something or not. So what I was about to share with you is my next big journey is shamanism. So I'm now learning to be a certified shamanic practitioner.
You are.
And what's interesting about shamanism is, for a long period of time, I kind of resisted it because I was like, oh, it's not me, too many feathers, too much dancing.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah, but something called out to me, and I kind of did a basic course in something called a score shamanism. And still then, I wasn't very convinced. And on my way back, I did a 2-day course to kind of dabble in it. And I was like, okay, I'm not convinced. And then I was like, hey, universe, give me a sign if I need to kind of go forward in this shamanic journey. So this course is in Bali. So I'm flying back from Bali. I'm at a bookstore. I love browsing books. So I'm looking at books. And you don't really find Reiki books in bookstores. That's not normally the case. And I found a book in a bookstore that says Reiki Shamanism. There's only one person who's written this book. It's called Reiki Shamanism, and it was the only copy in the bookstore. And I was like, how amazing is that? And how bizarre is that to find this book in a store when I'm looking for a sign whether I need to pursue shamanism or not, to find a book which says Reiki Shamanism. And the guy basically explores the fact that Reiki has shamanic roots. It's a very interesting book. You can find it on Amazon. But that was my sign. So I was like, all right, so I need to now do this forward and pursue with that. But Reiki has helped me
Amazing.
there as well, make a decision around it.
Interesting. So as you keep, and I know we've had this discussion before, as you keep adding, but actually I was wondering when you were saying, because I'd forgotten that you were an engineer by trade. Like that, like engineering is all about figuring out how things work, essentially, right? And building things into structures that work, that have longevity or foundation. So do you think that kind of momentum, because often it's almost like when you say it's a itch to scratch, like is it just like a curiosity around how something works, and then when you put different modalities to it, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, because you're scratching the wrong itch. You know what I mean? Does it feel like that for you? Like what is the, shall I say, I'll put it a different way. Like, what is the continuing drive to learn to the depth that you learn to?
I think for me, I think there are two aspects to it. One aspect to it is I just love learning. I think when I've done some of my life purpose exercises, just learning and just knowing new things has been fascinating for me. So I read quantum physics for fun. I don't think many people in the world do that. So it's just a passion for me to learn new things, learn new ideas, expand my thought process, expand what's possible. I guess that's the best way of putting it. But I think for me, the second push comes from my clients. So what I've realized is when I come across something which my current tools can't help move, of course, we can't promise healing or perfect growth for anybody, but at least we can find some movement. And if I find something that it doesn't move, and I'm kind of sitting and pondering, thinking, what would help them move? What could I have done differently? Is there anything in my toolkit that can help them make a move towards something positive or towards healing? Usually, if that happens a few times, I take it as a sign that I need to learn something different. And that's always been the case, that something new has popped up, and once that popped up and I put that in my toolbox, that toolbox will heal. Maybe the same client never comes back to me, but a different client with similar issue, that toolbox will help me provide movement, kind of help them move
Interesting.
forward with that. So I think a lot of my nudge comes, as I said, even my starting what therapy came from my clients.
Yeah.
And I think the continuous drive to improve, I guess, also comes from my clients. So I start seeing, I very clearly see a pattern, and I will have like six clients with the same issue and none of my tools are working. And I was like, okay, then I need a new tool. And a tool will just fall in my lap then.
Right.
It'll show up, somebody will talk about it, something will happen. And then when I explore that, of course, you go with your intuition on, do you think it'll be a good tool for you or not?
Interesting. That is very, that's a very true momentum of life, isn't it? That it kind of, there is that, there needs to be that kind of motivational curiosity in yourself that's looking, I guess, or open to looking at, ooh, what's out there still? What's still to be discovered? But then there's also that push, like we always say that in Reiki, right? It's like when the student is in front of you, you bloody well teach them. Don't palm them off to somebody else, right? Your student, not my student. Don't, like, if they're standing in front of you saying, I want this from you, you better bloody deliver. I love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. So talk a little bit about how, so I know, because you and I have had a treatment together, that you kind of combine a lot of your wisdom and knowledge now into providing whatever the client wants. So how does that happen for you? Like, how, when you're working with a client, like, how do you, yeah, just talk us through your process. Like, how, what pops up, or is it just, it pops up as and when you need it? Like, what happens?
Yeah. So I think from my modality kind of collection perspective, I think of it as a toolkit. So it's like my toolbox, and I can look into it and find the right tool. But what I would normally start is by doing a one-on-one session with a client. So when a new client come in, my first session is just a conversation. And a big part of that conversation is for me to identify patterns, for me to identify kind of what's happening, because usually people will come with a symptom. And then when we go deeper and deeper, we realize the symptom maybe is an indication of a deeper pattern. Or maybe the symptom is not really the issue is something completely else, which is causing the symptom. Right. So, for example, if a client's coming with a migraine issue and persistent migraine, usually migraines, kind of from a metaphysics perspective, no, it's a link to not happy with the decisions you're making. So you poke a little bit on the decision making, and then something will unravel or unfurl, which you can then lay out as a pattern of the key issues that might be happening. A migraine is just a physical symptom. So the first session is just kind of exploring and digging in, understanding what is the real issue. Then based on that, I do usually a short kind of a check in terms of what are they more comfortable with. Are they more comfortable with energy work to begin with, or are they more comfortable with more therapeutic mind work to begin with? So some of it is based on what they're saying, some of it is based on our intuition, some of it is based on if they have any past experiences, what they desire even. So we have a conversation and we come up with a wellness plan.
Right.
So then I would normally say, hey, this is probably what might help you with this issue. And then we keep it flexible. So we do one or two sessions and see how it's working. We, of course, give and take feedback. And then we continue through that plan.
Interesting. And so then do you have, I mean, this must happen, right? So then do you have clients that will come, they'll be happy, they'll have some relief, and then the next layer kind of starts to bubble up, right? It's like, I always find that. It's like, I've just removed one layer. I'm like, oh, phew. And then a month or two later, 6 months later, whatever, it's like, there's the next layer coming up. So then you must have a lot of clients that kind of keep coming back. And then do you notice that there'll be, oh, like, now really this is a kind of past life issue or whatever, but then next time they come back, it might be something completely different.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, you're able to then really flex with that, aren't you?
Yes, you have to, because to your point, if they've come with one issue and that's sorted. So for example, if they had issue with, say, mother-in-law, right? Very common thing, right? And we kind of sort what that issue is for them. Then suddenly the client might go back and realize, hey, it was not only the mother-in-law, the same thing kind of happens at work, or the same thing happens, the power struggles is happening in my relationship with my husband. And then we go a little bit deeper and say, okay, it's not really about the mother-in-law, it's really about her own power struggles. And that power struggles may be coming from this life or a past life. And we start exploring that with combination of the inner child work and the past life work. But what I've seen very recently, more and more and more, is the ancestral work come through. So we build that in as well. So one modality I didn't talk about, which I've really working a lot on, is family constellation. So we do a lot of work. And I think that's one modality that puts together, gets all of them together. So we actually do inner child work, past life work, ancestral work in a constellation setup. So just depending on what's happening and what's the client's receptivity, we go through the modalities.
Interesting. So here's a question, and I bring it up because I've noticed this in my own healing, and my mother mentioned this as well. People with Reiki. So people that come and already are Reiki, they're already doing self-healing. I don't want to put you in an awkward position by asking this, but my
It's okay.
mum would always say that people who already use Reiki on themselves are much easier to regress. That was her comment. Is that something you've noticed, or is it more just a general openness? Like, what makes a really good healing client for you?
I think, I guess I'll put it this way. To regress and to work with, say, hypnotherapy, you know, child therapy, past life therapy, you need to have some comfort level in accessing your subconscious mind and connecting with the information that comes through. Now, for some, I've had instances of clients who've had no healing experience and they've been amazing. They've been brilliant in terms of accessing information. And in other scenarios, I've had some people who struggle a little bit in accessing information. But, and yes, you're right in the sense people who've had some healing experiences, even if they've just been doing meditation or doing Reiki, as long as they've had some experience in accessing the subconscious mind, it tends to be easier for them to access therapeutic setting, but not always. What I find easy, like I'll give you an example of a client I was working with. So there was a client who was having trouble accessing her subconscious mind. And what we did is, because that was happening, I did one Reiki session, energy clearing session for her. And then I did a one family constellations. We did energy work. And in the constellation session, what we figured out, there was a very very strong inner child that needed healing. It was a stuck inner child. And we moved some energy in the constellation. On top of that, I normally record a visualization exercise I give people who have troubles doing that. So she heard that for 21 days. And then the session she came after was absolutely beautiful. So we were able to access all subconscious mind memories. So I think it
Interesting.
just to understand that there might be a block and to release that, or they're just not familiar with that and get them familiar with that process. That works. But as I said, now I think the consciousness in general is so high that clients who have had no experience of healing, they come in and they're accessing information and getting such amazing results with prior, like they've just had no prior experience with anything. So that's been happening as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, I do think that people's op willingness and openness it's something I haven't seen before. It's extraordinary, isn't it? And the conversations you have with people as well, and they're just kind of like wide. So to continue this conversation, because I think this might be something of interest as well, and then we'll start looking at wrapping up. But it's if people are listening to this and they're like, well, I want to be more open, like you say, but maybe there's some kind of block. Like, is that what you would, yeah, like what kind of things would you recommend to kind of say, well, here are some things maybe they could do for themselves to make themselves more open to kind of accessing that wisdom layer that we talked about right at the beginning, right? What are some of the things that you would recommend?
Try Reiki.
Hallelujah, absolutely.
But other than Reiki, if they don't have access to that for whatever reason, you could always start with some basic visualization. There's lots of YouTube videos on meditation and visualization. So just starting to access that and staying awake, because a lot of people, when they start doing meditations and visualizations, tend to fall asleep. So staying awake, so kind of keeping your spine straight, not lying down on your bed, and listening to a YouTube video on visualization and meditation, and just kind of start doing that helps. One of the very interesting exercises I give people if they have trouble, especially accessing past life, is I ask them to make up stories. So if you can, just sit with your eyes open, just sit in a nice, comfortable place when you're not stressed, and say, if you were a Roman soldier, what would that be? What would that story look like? And just make up your own life story as if you were a Roman soldier or a Greek goddess, or whatever. Pick a character that in the past that you resonate with, and make up a life story that might work for you. And this is, of course, done eyes open. And what's interesting is, I personally think that you're picking up a character and writing it'll probably be somewhere close to what actually happened. But it also starts kind of helps you access a part of your creative brain that you may not access before, and very specifically to past life work. It makes it easier to access life in a therapeutic setting.
That is a great tip, because I've had people say that before, in past life regression. It's kind of like, oh, how do I know? It feels like I'm just making it up. And it's actually getting people to understand that into the doorway to intuition is through the imagination. Like, you do have to make stuff up in order to get through to the truth, because the making it up is part of the truth, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
that's.
And I also share with them is what we're doing, at least in the work we do, is it's therapeutic importance. So I actually, in a way, it doesn't matter if you're making it up. So you've come in for claustrophobia, you go to three past lives, and you don't have claustrophobia anymore. Now, whether the three past lives are made up or not, it doesn't
Who
matter.
cares?
You don't have claustrophobia anymore. Is it if it's a movie from Netflix you saw yesterday, it doesn't matter. So what we're looking for from a past life perspective is a therapeutic impact or a therapeutic movement. And that usually happens in a past life. And the other thing to think about when people think they're making it up, I said you can make up any story in the world. Why would you make up this deep, depressing story of being killed in a castle? Give yourself some credit for imagination. So if you've come up with this really bad past life, it's likely to be true.
You're absolutely right. Oh my God, I never thought about it like that. It's like, what? Yeah. Why would you choose the most dramatically depressing one out of all of them? Why couldn't you be like a princess living like the Bridgerton life?
Exactly.
You're
You could have
absolutely
made up a
right.
good story. Why this one?
I love that. That's hilarious. Oh my God, Pooja, seriously, I could sit and talk to you for hours. This has been so interesting, but for the sake of timing, I'm gonna kind of like hone it in now. So we are gonna put a link to your website at the bottom for anybody that wants to get hold of Pooja.
Thank
You're
you.
based in Singapore. I don't know if we made that clear. But you also do online stuff as well, right? So you do
It's all about
online.
the online.
Perfect. So people can get hold of you if they're interested in exploring your vast toolbox of wisdom. Which is quite extraordinary. And yeah, I love the fact that you're now going into the shamanism, because that's kind of a whole different cultural thing as well, right? Like, it's kind of a it's accessing, well, kind of isn't it, isn't it? Like, shamanism is based on the elements, isn't it?
It is.
Essentially.
It's based on the energies of the earth and energies of the spirit world. So it is slightly different, not slightly. It's different from other stuff, other energy modalities I've experienced before. Think that's what's interesting about it. It adds another layer, another flavor of healing, that's actually quite deep.
Interesting. Amazing. Amazing. Well, as always, just such a delight to chat with you. And yeah, thanks so much. Thanks so much for taking the time. And hope everybody enjoyed this. I know there's just so much more. If you want a second part with Pooja, then just jot down the comments and also what kind of things you'd like us to discuss, because as I said, we could literally do this forever and frequently do. All right,
Thank
everybody.
you. This was really good fun. Thank you.
Take care. Take care, everybody. And yeah, hope you enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.